Our shit's fast, Hanan.
Eretz Yisrael is a world in itself. Anyone in this room who's been zaycha to live in Eretz Yisrael, or even to spend some time there, will know that our experiences in Eretz Yisrael are different to our experiences anywhere else in the world. Whether it's a few minutes by the Kosel, whether it's meeting one of our gedolim, or even experiencing the Hafganas and the Pashkevillen, just the air in Eretz Yisrael is different. So I'd like to share with you one of my Eretz Yisrael digger experiences. We're going back about 6 years. I was living there. Motzei Shabbos, the news filtered in that Rav Mechel Yehuda Lefkowitz had passed out on Shabbos afternoon. It was a serious situation. He was rushed to hospital. They took him to Shaarei Tzedek then. And you can imagine already the Mitzvah, Sunday, the Bati Midrashim were full. All the yeshiva, like everyone had crammed together to try and daven to save one of our gedolim. Monday afternoon, the news came in again. It was all over. Rav Mechel Yehuda had returned his neshama to the Rabbein Shleilam. Tuesday morning, the Levi was called for, and I remember the scenes, literally Yetzias Mitzrayim, the entire yeshiva world were piling down Kvish Echad there. There was, Kvish Echad is like a main road, it's like a motorway, but people had their hands out trying to get tramps, trying to get lifts. Hundreds and thousands of people made their way to Bnei Barak. Now we're talking Chav Vav Sivan. It was one of the hottest days in the year. Bnei Barak at the best of times isn't too relaxed, too cool. It was boiling hot. I remember standing there near Ponovich, crammed together with literally hundreds and thousands of people waiting to hear, to give our last kavod to one of the gedolim. It was boiling. I remember there was hatzalah stations all over the show. Just, people were passing out. Every few seconds, you heard the guy saying, hatzalah, hatzalah. Literally, someone had passed out from the heat. They cut the levaya short. But in that short levaya, I want to share with you what I heard. There was a couple of espedim, but Rabbi Yosef Shlomo Karlansky, who was a grandson of Rav Mechel Yehuda, he read out Rav Mechel Yehuda's tzavor, his will. And this is what he said. He says, Yerani, I am afraid. And I always wondered, what is a Gadol Hador afraid of? So what's Rav Mechel Yehuda afraid of? He says, Yerani, I am afraid that Roiv Masai, he said, yeah, I've achieved a lot. I've learned, I've davened. He's Vak Stoys, he was one of the Gadol Hador. But Yerani, Sheroiv Masai, most of my actions are mitzvahs and noshim melumada, are done by rote. He worried that he didn't internalize, he didn't feel his actions. Now listen here, I don't think Rav Mechel Yehuda had an issue with this, personally. And I think if he did, he for sure dealt with it by the time he was 18, maybe 24. But definitely by the time he was 97 years old, this was no longer an issue for him. But I also believe that when a Gadol Hador writes a tzavor, he's writing a tzavor to Klal Yisrael. He's writing a tzavor to each one of us. And he's telling us, yeah, we live in a world where there's so many rules, regulations, halachas. And we often go about our daily days, our daily life, and we just tick the boxes. He's challenging us. Do we internalize what we're doing? Do we think deeper than just the basic action we have to do? Is it just mitzvah sanoshe melumada? You see, Rabbi Yisrael, the Jewish year is designed in a way that we have the ability to stop. We have the ability to ponder. And we have the ability to think. Do you know that feeling when you have kind of a question at the back of your mind? Now, it's not like one of the minhagim we do, one of the halachas. You have a question about it at the back of your mind, but you never really bring it to fruition. You never really bring it to the front. It's kind of something that ticks over the back of your mind, and you go about doing your daily life year by year, week by week. And then suddenly someone comes along to you and asks you this question. Now, you've never actually asked this question, but when he asks you the question, you kind of think to yourself, hey, I've always had that question. You know you haven't ever asked the question, but you've always had that question somewhere at the back of your mind. I don't know if you know what I'm on about, but I had such a question like this. A few weeks ago, a guy came over to me and he asked me this question. And he asked me a question. I'm like, do you know something? That question's always bothered me. I know I've never actually asked the question, but it's always subconsciously at the back of my mind. It's always been there. I'll share with you the question. The question is about two words. Now, before I share with you these two words, I'm going to tell you, you've heard these two words, I'm sure, over the last week or two, probably about 50 times. And over the next day or two, at least another 50 times you'll hear these two words. But allow me to question these two words a little deeper. And he asked me like this. He said to me, Rav Aaron, can you translate the words sinas chinam for me? I said, sure, that's an easy one. Sina is hate. Chinam means empty, baseless, baseless hatred. He said, I don't understand. He said, baseless hatred? Hatred for no reason? He said, I don't understand. He said, I know lots of people. He said, yeah. He said, some people. He said, listen, I'm a friendly guy. Most people I get on with. He said, I have a few people that, you know, get under my skin at times. He said, maybe I even have one or two chavra that I would say I hate. Maybe. But he said, for no reason. He said, these guys, they double-crossed me. They said, Lashon Hara Rechilas, they did me in. So to say to those people, maybe I have a feelings of hate. He said, I don't know anyone who hates anyone for no reason. What sort of a person hates people for no reason? I translate, sinas chenam, for no reason. And there's a question, it kind of came to me, and I was like, yeah, I've done Tisha B'Av, you know, a bunch of times. I've done the 3 weeks, I've heard all the shemuzim. But for no reason, it just didn't sit with me. So I looked, yeah, I saw Pshatim and Zachen, I heard. And then I heard a story from Rabbi Frant. Who else? The story's not a true story, but it allowed me to feel a little bit more comfortable with this question. I'll share the story with you. There was this kid called Yankel, and he was in a classroom. And his Rebbe was trying to teach. And Yankel was, I don't know whether he had ADD or Asperger's, or maybe he was just a regular kid who was looking for a little bit more of attention. And he had a pencil. Now you guys think, a pencil's a pencil, you write with a pencil, but you don't realize, in a classroom setting, a pencil has many more functions than just writing. So as the Rebbe was teaching, and the class went quiet, and he had the attention of everyone, which is quite a challenge nowadays, Yankel takes this pencil and he gives it as a flick. And it goes on the floor with a clunk and a plonk. And you can imagine already there's, you know, some chastera in the classroom. Everyone's, Yankel flicked his pencil. The Rebbe doesn't know what to do. He's a good Rebbe. He means well. He looks over at Yankel. He gives him a warm look. And he says, Yankel, you know, this is not befitting for you. Yankel takes the pencil back. And he realizes he shouldn't be doing that. A few minutes go on. A few minutes later, suddenly again, another flick. The Rebbe this time already gives him a stronger look. He's like, Yankel, watch it. A few seconds later, again, and the Rebbe's literally, you know, getting under his skin. He's reaching boiling point here. Doesn't know what to do. He's got to teach. He's got this boy. He's thinking, you know, he's calculating his options. He's like, I want to let it go. Doesn't want to let it go. He gives Yankel a look. He says, one more time. Just try me. Anyway, sure enough, maybe he held on for 6 minutes this time. 6 minutes later, the moment arrives. Yankel flicks his pencil. Plonk, plonk. The Rebbe goes mad. He stands up, he grabs whatever's on his desk there, chavis of stapler, he runs over to Yankel's desk, and wham! Smashes Yankel on the head. The second he does it, he regrets it. There's blood pouring everywhere, the kids are screaming. He realizes that in his moment of rage, Yankel's finger is on the floor. He doesn't know what to do. He calls an ambulance. He's under panic. He thinks he's lost his job now for sure. The ambulance comes, the sirens are wailing, the ulama are screaming, the kids in the class are all traumatized. The parents get called. He goes in the ambulance with Yankel to the hospital. He doesn't know what to do. He's cut the kid's finger off. He doesn't know what to do. He goes to the hospital, they call ahead, the best surgeon gets called to take Yankel into surgery. Yankel goes into surgery, the Rebbe's sitting outside there, saying to Hillim with all his might, he knows his life is on the line here. The Rebbe's, the child's parents, Yankel's parents come along, the Rebbe's sitting outside the surgery, doubling and waiting. And after 2 hours, the surgeon comes out, and he doesn't have a good look on his face. He has that look on his face. He hasn't managed to do anything. He looks over at the Rebbe and the parents, and he says, I'm sorry, but Yankel will be living the rest of his life without one of his fingers. The parents are tzibroch, and they look over at the Rebbe, and they say to the Rebbe, Rebbe, how could you do such a thing to our Yankel? For no reason! And the Rebbe says, well, actually, it wasn't no reason. You see, he was flicking his pencil in class. What sort of a guy is this? Giving a reason for cutting off a finger? And the message is obvious to every one of us. A reason has to be relative to what is justifying. Sinas chinam. I read 2 weeks ago in the Tanya, he talks about how everyone in Klal Yisrael has the same Shirash HaNeshama. We're all part of one Neshama, we all come back to one core. Sinas Chinam. Is there any reason, I question, that justifies sinna? I don't know. But I also know that we're human. And yeah, we all have moments when we're inspired and we kind of realize, you know, what's it for? Why am I so creaked with him? Is it really worth it? Let me let it go. Should we be fighting about it? You pick up a phone and you realize that years of hate were a waste of time. But we're also human. And we're also not always holding that. We don't always see it that way. We often see our situation, the way situation, we feel hurt, we feel attacked. So I'd like to share with you, on a more practical level, I'd like to try and discover, explore the parasha of hate. And then, yeah, hopefully on a practical level, hopefully we can actually come back to the Tanya and maybe understand it on a deeper, more halakhic level. So I'd like to start with a pasuk in the Torah that talks about sinner, where is a better place to start. Vayikra Yotes, Parshas Kedoshim, in pasuk shteit, Lo yisisna es achicha bilvavecha. Do not hate your brother, bilvavecha, in your heart. This is one of the main psukim. This is the loisase of sinna. I want to go back to the core. Now I ask, are you troubled hearing these words? Loisisna, do not hate. I'll translate one more time. Esachicha, your brother. Bilvavecha, in your heart. So the obvious kasha that screams to mind is, don't hate your brother in your heart. Oh, so that means if I tell him to his face, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you, that's okay. Just don't hate him in your heart. That's what it says. I'm reading the pasuk. I'm not making this up. What's going on here? It's a bomb kasha. Don't hate him in your heart. But if you tell him, then it's okay. You go around telling people, I hate you, 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 you. You know, so what's going on here? So the Ramban of Anot already has this kasha. Says the Ramban, pasuk Zayin. He says, Avada, the Torah means to us a hate in your heart, and also open hate. Avada, all hate's not allowed. He just says here, he says, Shederech hasoinim lechasis esenosam belivam. He says, the way is, he says, Debe hakosas bohoiver. The Torah talks about the regular, normal scenario. The Torah is talking about, normally, someone hates someone, you don't always have the guts and the courage to tell them what you feel about them, so you keep it inside. He says the derech hasayinim lechasis is nosam belibam. But avada, the Ramban seems to hold the fiyah pashtus anyway, that avada, hate to someone's face, is also not allowed. What's this? Bilvavecha, bilvavecha, bilvavekasad bohoide. So that's the Ramban. But I'd like to share with you a Rambam. Now, if they had this Rambam in the yeshivas, if they were doing these sugyas, this would be the Rambam pliya. This would be the Rambam pliya. They would be sitting with the Rukhaims and prescribes on this Rambam all day long. Listen to the Rambam. I'll read it out for you word for word. Rambam's in Deus Pirik Vav Alokhahe. Kol Hasoine Echad Yisrael Beliboy. Anyone who hates someone from Yisrael, another Yid Beliboy in his heart, Oiva Beloisase. He's Oiva on a Loisase. Shenema. Hamakes. Oh, 1 second. Shenema. Loisisna Sachicha Bilvavecha. The passage we just read. Shenema Loisisna Sachicha Bilvavecha. He says, Ein Loiken Alav Zeh. We don't get Malkus because it's Lausha in Beimaisa. There's no action involved. Veloi His Hira Toira Ela Al Sina Shebelev. The Torah is only bothered about sinner, believe in your heart. Aval hamaka es chaver, someone who hits his friend, v'amacharfoyin as a goin and he shelts him, afal b'she'in rishai, he shouldn't be doing it. Ein oivim mishum alisisna. I can't make this up. The Rambam writes, the whole problem of alisisna is if it's in your heart. If you tell him to your face, like we said, I hate you, that's okay. What is going on here? And all of them are kid don't know what to do with himself. Because if Mishnah already starts trying to be madchik, that the Rambam doesn't mean it, I don't think you'll ever get such a moment for a Rambam. The Rambam is pretty clear. As long as you tell him you're okay. So what's going on here? So I came across a wonderful Yad HaKtana. The Yad HaKtana is a parish on the Rambam. And it's so wonderful. I'm really excited to share it with you. Says the Yad HaKtana, Ika sinna salev, kasha'ine mare o moidiya sinna klau. Sin in one's heart is when we don't share it with anyone else. He says, ki tivo v'inyono shel ha'sinna. He says, the nature of hate is that he bo'eres ke'esh v'kirboi. It burns like a fire inside our hearts. We hate the guy and it just gets more and more. U'b'chol es mis'oir ha'leiv lach v'yishroel chaveroi. And the sinner telling him to want to do worse to his friend, to do bad things. V'yishchar ko'al v'ovis yaisa. And these two hearts will become more distant. V'ha'sinna misgaberes ma'oid u'ma'oid. And the sinner will grow and grow out of control. He writes, ad she'yamoid al chayach chaveroi. Until he wants to kill his friend. Which is something I hope you can't fathom.
But he says here, אבל אם הוא מודיע,
if he shares his feelings with his friend, ומראה הסינה, and he explains what he's feeling, ומוציאו מלבו, and he gets it out of his heart, אז נכבס האש הסינה מלבו, the fire of hate will be extinguished. My Rabbi Yitzchak Berkowitz, he shared with me this Yad HaTana, and he explained us, that we don't really hate. We just need to share things. I'll tell you this a little deeper. I'll start with a psychology concept, if that's okay with the Olam. There's many, psychology is very in at the moment, there's many types of psychology. There's narrative therapy, gestalt therapy, Adlerian therapy, other types. There's one therapy called CBT. You don't come across it. Cognitive, stands for cognitive behavioral therapy. It's a type of therapy. Originally it was behavioral therapy. The moderner ones, they changed it to cognitive therapy because they're also the process of the mind. I just want to share with you the Esh the Aleph of CBT. The Esh the Aleph of CBT is that when we see something happening, when we experience something, when anything happens to us, we have to be aware that we are experiencing this through our mind, through our, what they call, paradigm. It's the way we see things. But it's not always the reality of the situation. I'll share with you a little story to just explain this on a simple level. There was this guy called Dovi, and Dovi gets up in the morning, he realizes he's missed his alarm clock, he's going to be late. Anyway, he quickly rushes to shul, quick, chap to shacharis, he tries to get to work. I know the guys who have a boss will understand the feeling that he gets to work. Now, the main thing in the work is to get there a minute before your boss, it doesn't matter how long before, just 1 minute before that he thinks you've been there. He doesn't know how long you've been there, he's not going to ask you how long have you been here. And he comes there, the same minute as his boss sees him coming in late. He sits down by his desk, his coffee spills over, he messes up a big deal. Mamish, the worst day of his life. He says the wrong things. It's Mamish, a disaster. Yeah, one of these days. He ends up having to stay over till he wants to really get home at 5. He gets home at 6. He tries to start his car on the way to get home at 6 o'clock in the evening, and his car doesn't start. So he thinks he'll walk. It's a 20-minute walk home. He starts walking home. And it was a sunny day. His mazel that day, it's all happening. Suddenly, after 2 minutes, the sky's open. He was probably in Manchester, the truth is. And he's soaking wet. And he's walking home there, you can imagine, he's grumpy, he's tired, he's upset. And he walks home 15 minutes, he gets home drenched. He's hoping he'll get home, actually, there'll be up some nice supper there waiting, you know. He opens the door, and it's mamish like London Zoo has come to Manchester. The kids are all pulling him. The spaghetti on the wall, supper hasn't been thought of, that means the spaghetti on the wall was yesterday's supper. It's mamish. And he looks over, and he tries to find his wife, and he's like, come on, like, you know, what are you doing with yourself all day? He has a go at her, and he's madcha the shchina from the house. He speaks in a way that a person shouldn't be speaking to his wife. Okay, this is the first story. Here's another story. It's the same story. I'm not going to bother repeating it. But there's one change in the story. One change. One small change. He gets up late. He's in the bus. And he spills a coffee. And then the late. And the 5 o'clock. And the rain. And he's on the way home. Now this guy lives. He lives. There's a little lake. Mamish a few minutes away from where he lives. And as he's mamish 2 minutes from the house, he hears a kid screaming. Save me! He runs over to the lake. He sees there's a little kid there drowning. He runs in, he doesn't know what to do, he hasn't got time to call anyone. He jumps in his clothes, he's even fully soaking wet now, he goes deep in, and he tries, and b'chazde Hashem, he managed to save the kid, he pulls the kid out, he quickly calls Atzala there within a second, Hashem, they're very quick, they resuscitate him, everything's okay, they take him off to hospital. The Gantzazach took about a 10-minute detour off his way, and he comes into the house, the guy is feeling on top of the world, the spaghetti's there, the kid's there, the Gantzazel Bazach. But he looks over, he goes over to his rabbits and he says, tells her how much she means to him, she means the world to him. Now you tell me, what changed in the two stories? Anything changed? Anything outside of his mindset changed? Nothing outside his mindset changed. Because the Esh, the Aleph, what the Yad HaTana wants to tell us is that so many times we're ready to get upset with other people, but we have to realize that the perception of the situation begins inside ourselves. There's a wonderful pasuk in the parasha of Tzaras. I'll share with you, it's talking about Tzaras and Begodim, and the halacha is there that if there's a shayla on the Tzaras, the Kohen has to be mazgeri, to put it aside for 7 days, and after that he checks the Tzaras to see, has it changed? Has the marriage changed? Zog the pasuk, v'roh ha-Kohen achri yuchabis es ha-nega, he looks, the Kohen now is looking at the nega to see what's happened with the nega, v'hinei loy hofach ha-nega es einoy. It's a real gem of a vart. The nega hasn't changed einoy. Einoy means it's I. Now, I don't understand. The whole way through the parasha, and Tzaras, Adam, the whole way through, it calls the Tzaras a mare. A mare Tzaras. What's up is done? It starts calling it v'loy hofach es einoy. So I heard the word most wonderful, wonderful, wonderful idea. Einai means eye. Why did psoas come? You know, you look at Wikipedia, it will tell you that psoas is a chronic infection. We know why we get psoas. Psoas for Lashon Hara, the Gemara brings a bunch of reasons. Rashi already writes, one of the reasons are psoas ayin. The guy doesn't have the right focus. You see, the Rabbeinu Shalom doesn't want the guy should have to suffer to go outside the camp and have to have his clothes with psoas, his body with psoas, his health with psoas for no reason. It's there to teach us a message. It's there for us to learn from. It's there for us to internalize something. It's there to teach us to be hafach es einoi, to change our eye. And the Ger Rebbe drives this home in the most wonderful way. He says there's two words in Lashon HaKodesh that have the same letters with one difference. The word nega and the word oineg. The same letters, the same three letters. But there's one difference where you put the ayin. Ayin resembles our eye. If we put our eye at the beginning, if we have a positive outlook, we realize, we look through life through rosy glasses. Oineg, the ayin's at the beginning. Life will be a pleasure, says the Ger Rebbe. But if we have tzaras ayin, we've just, you know, we're always looking, we're always wondering what Yana's trying to do to us. We're always seeing the situation the other way. Nega, the ayin at the end, life will be one great infliction. It'll be a difficult time. You say a story, this woman used to come down every morning, she would look through the window and say to her husband, the neighbor has no idea how to do washing. I don't know what it is. I don't know whether she's buying the cheap powder, I don't know whether the washing machine isn't good, but every day she's looking at the washing and she's like, it's Gainish, the washing, this lady has no idea how to wash. And after five times this story happening, she comes down one morning and she says, I don't know what happened today. I don't know whether she got better powder, I don't know whether she got a new machine, but the washing is pristine white. She says to her husband, it's gewaldic, she's changed. Her husband says, no, today I cleaned the windows. We're so busy looking through our dirty window. They tell a story, amazing story, about the Feingold family in Ashdod. A lovely young family, Mr. Feingold. He was a Ben Torah. And his oldest daughter had reached marriageable age. So you can imagine, the Mishpacha in Eretz Yisrael, he's about to make his first chasna. Didn't have two shekels to rub together. And he confided in his closest friends. He said, Pasha, I don't know how I'm going to do this. It's very nice. I'm excited about the chasna, but I've got anxiety. I don't know how to deal with this. His friends weren't in a much better situation than him. But the kehillah felt they want to do something. So one of his, you know, there's an ask in there, the good people around. He went and they made a collection to try and help Mr. Feingold make chasna. Everyone gave from what they didn't have. And they get together a little bit. Now, Mr. Feingold had to sit down and find a hall for the chasna, so he goes to sit down to the local hall there in Ashdod to try and book the hall for the chasna. He's sitting there with the owner of the hall, and the guy says to him, Feingold, are you from Germany? So he's like, yeah. He said, do you know someone called Leo Feingold? He's like, Leo Feingold? He said, that's my father. He's like, oh my gosh, is he still around? He says, no, fortunately he's passed away. He's like, I want to tell you, look no further. The entire chasna is on my cheshbon. He's like, what are you talking about? He said, when I was in the war in Germany, he said, I was about to be caught by the Nazis. He said, your father saved me. He hid me. He bought me food every day. And ever since liberation, I've been looking for him to return the goodness. He said, Hashem sent you to me. He said, you don't need to worry. This chasna is on me. And in Eretz Yisrael, the whole people, they also have the caterers and they have everything is there. Contract. He said, al ha-cheshbon, the entire chasna. And Mamash, Mr. Feingold feels this all off his chest, the whole extra financial pressure. And then the guy says, Father, he says, I want to tell you, you don't need to worry. It's not just going to be a chasna. This is going to be a chasna, it's going to be the talk of the town. We're going to have a 15-piece band, there's going to be fresh flowers, there's going to be a draping in the hall, it's going to be a course meal. His face is getting nervous. He said, 1 second. He said, no. He said, we're simple people. He's already thinking what's going to be by his chasna. You know, the whole town are going to come in, they've collected for him to make chasna, and this guy is making the chasna to pop everyone's eyes out. He says, I'm a simple guy. He says, just keep it simple, it's okay. He says, I insist. He doesn't know what to do with himself. He says to him, please, I beg of you, don't do this to me. By here, Yom, the chasna comes. The guests walk into the hall, they're all excited to take part in this chasna, and their eyes, you know, excited, and then suddenly their eyes looking around. Mr. Feingold didn't enjoy the chasna one bit. That Shabbos in Shul, The Rav of the community was Reb Eli Weiss. Reb Eli Weiss addressed the Kehillah and he told them the true story. But it was too late. So many times in our life, it's just too late. It's too late. When it's too late, it's too late. This guy didn't enjoy his daughter's chasna. So people hear this, and they want to try and see past the way they see things. They want to try and be nicer. But often, what happens is when people hear this idea, they leave off. They're like, listen, I don't know. You're right. I don't know. I don't want to start with anyone. I don't want to be upset with anyone. I don't want to be tzikriked. But they just kind of stand back from the situation. Standing back from the situation isn't going to help anything. The antidote for sinas chinam is not standing back from a situation. It's not what they call in English indifference. It's not an apathetic approach. What's going to change a situation, what's going to change sinas chinam, is avas chinam. Yeah, it's a stage to appreciate we don't have it all clear. It's a stage to appreciate we need to take things further. But the idea is not to hold off. The antidote for sinas chinam is going to be avas chinam. We're told, I'll read you out Loshna Gemara, Akamsa or Bar Kamsa Chor of Yerushalayim. I wonder if you've heard this question. Akamsa, because of Kamsa, and Bar Kamsa Chor of Yerushalayim. Now, Bar Kamsa was the guy who got upset because he got thrown out of his party, and he took the animal to the Roman emperor, and he stirred the whole pot. I'm not judging him, maybe he got very offended. Not judging him, but he's the guy who stirred the pot. Kamsa was just the guy they got mixed up with. What did Kamsa do wrong? Akamsa or Bar Kamsa, he was the equal share. What did Kamsa do wrong? The En Yaakov says a murder of Pshat. He says, Kamsa was there by the party. He saw what was going on. And he didn't mix in. He didn't say anything. He was indifferent. Yeah, he thought, the stomach, there's perceptions and zachin, I don't know what. But he didn't do anything. That's not going to stop sinas chinam. The Gemara tells us already, what wound Bar Kamsa up so much? What got him going? It says, Yosvi Rabbanon v'loi mochubei. All the Rabbanim were sitting there, v'loi mochubei. They didn't say anything to the host. Shmami no konichelehu. It looks like they were happy with what was going on. When we're quiet, indifference is almost as bad. Elie Wiesel, Holocaust, the famous Holocaust survivor, he had the chance to, in 1999, he gave a big presentation in the East Room of the White House on, an event there to commemorate President Roosevelt, and he spoke there. I'll share with you the words he said, I have them written here. He said, in the depths of the Gehenna, that was Auschwitz and Treblinka. He said, we had one small, miserable consolation. He said, the prisoners had the knowledge that it was all a secret to the outside world. Yet the discovery after the war, said Wiesel, that those leaders had in fact known about Auschwitz, was a terrible shock. What happened, he demanded. Why the indifference on the highest level to the suffering of the victims? He said, indifference is more dangerous than anger and hate. Because he said, hatred and anger can elicit a response. You denounce it, you disarm it. Indifference elicits no response. To be indifferent to suffering is what makes a human being inhuman. Reb Tzadok HaKohen has a Meridigi aside. He says, if you want to understand anything, you have to look for the very first time that word is mentioned in the Torah. He said, where is the first time sinner is mentioned in the Torah? The first time sin is mentioned in the Torah is by Yaakov and Leah. It says, "Vayar Hashem ki sanu aleah." I don't know if the word sin is mentioned there. I don't know. You can check after. This is Reb Tzadok HaKohen. "Vayar Hashem ki sanu aleah." Leah was hated. What does that mean? Yaakov, Ishtam, Yeshiva, Holland, Yaakov, Avinu, he hated someone, his wife. Sinner. So I want to share with you the Ramban has this kasha, and he brings the Radak. I'll share with you the Loshen. He said, the fact, but yeah, Gamis Rachim Ileo, Loishes Sinner, not that he hated the Chas V'Shalom, he Boishe B'Dov, Chas V'Shalom, that he said bad things. Just that he loved Rachel more. There was more Ava to give that wasn't being given. Says the Radak, Ramban quotes him, Sinner is withholding Ava, a lack of Ava, indifference, apathy. That is Sinner. Sinas chinam is not about, yeah, vada, we shouldn't be out there being makes chaviri. But the Yadav Tana realizes that we've got to be proactive. We've got to be out there. We've got to be showing avas chinam. A wise person once said that there are 4 billion people in the world who go to sleep every night starving for a decent meal. But he said there are 5 billion people who go to sleep every night starving for a few words of sincere praise, appreciation, and avas chinam. So many ra, yeah, it's one stage to go away from the ra, to try and better our ways. But at Asay Toiv, the Pasuk straight away wants us to be proactive. The antidote for sinas chinam is not indifference. The antidote for sinas chinam is avas chinam, to go out there and be proactive. I'll share with you one more va, one more story. We'll call it there. Very interesting, Kasha. The Gemara tells us, Seches Yomad of Tesamud Beis, why was the first Beis HaMikdash Nechrav? Avodah Zarah, Gilui Aroyos, and Shvichas Damim, the three worst Aveiros. Avodah Zarah, Gilui Aroyos, Shvichas Damim, Rachmana Litzlan. Says the Gemara, Avol Mikdash Sheini, Shei Oiskim B'Torah, they were learning Torah, B'mitzvahs, Gemilas Chasod, Mipnei Ma'acharav. Mipnei Shehoysa B'Yisein Aschenam, we come back to these two words that we started with. Says the Gemara, Sheshikula Sinas Chinam Keneged Shalosh Aviris. Sinas Chinam is equally bad to the three worst Aviris in the Torah. How does this work? What does this mean? Gilui Aroyos, Shvichas Damim, Avodah Zarah. How can Sinas Chinam compare? I'm not here to promote hate. But how can we understand this? And I heard a wonderful idea from Avshaya Grunfeld. Beautiful idea. There's an Orach Chaim in Parashas Vayakal. And he brings that we have 613 mitzvahs. He explains the 613, what's the number? It's there keneged, the Ramach and Shasa, Ramach Yivaram Shasa Gidin. Each limb in our body is keneged one of the mitzvahs. And they're there to be mesakon our guf. On levels we don't always understand. But there's some tikkun in each time we do a mitzvah. Ask the Orach Chaim Akasha. He says, I don't understand. He said, some mitzvahs only men can do. Some mitzvahs only women can do. Some mitzvahs only Kohenim can do. Some mitzvahs only Levim can do. Some mitzvahs you can only do if you're in Eretz Yisrael. He said, where is the person that has the tikkun in his guf of the 613? There's no person who can do all 613 mitzvahs. What does it mean that the 613 are connected to our guf? There's no one guf that can do it. Pele v'kasha. Says the Orach Chaim. Read you out. Elavadai. He says over here, Shatiskayim HaTorah B'machberes HaKlolos V'yizku Zeh Mizeh. He says, when we are one, when we come back to that Tanya, when we remember that we have one Sheresh HaNeshama, he says, when there's Avas Chinam and we live life as a Klal and we're out there proactively to help one another, he says, we all connect. And he says, my Kiyum of a man's mitzvah helps for a woman. The Koyan's Kiyum of a Koyan's mitzvah helps for the Gan's Klal Yisrael. When Klal Yisrael have Avas Chinam, all our mitzvahs are combined to one unified effort. And everyone in Klal Yisrael has a kiyum of the 613 mitzvahs to be misakon the guf. This is the pshat. Why Sinas Chinam is worse than the three greatest Averas. Because the only way we have anything is if we're together. If we're together and there's Avas Chinam, then we can blend, then even though no one person has all the mitzvahs, but we can put everything together. If there's pirud in Klal Yisrael, we have nothing. We're empty. We're finished. That's why a Beis HaMikdash of the three worst Averis was able to be rebuilt after a few years. But a Beis HaMikdash of Sinas Chinam, Kol Doi V'Doi She'ini Nivne B'Yomov, Ma'alin Olav Kidu Echrivoi. Yeah, of course, we're being machriv, because by the active sinner, we're not allowing those chosim to combine together to be able to build a Beis HaMikdash of Shlishi. That's the Pshat Limotz HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kidu Machzik Baruch Hu Yisrael El HaShalom. Because without Shalom, there's no Shlemos, there's no connecting factor. We don't have the 613 mitzvahs, we don't have the schosim we need to bring the Ge'ola. I'll finish with a story. Baruch Hirschberg. Baruch Hirschberg was a young 17-year-old. He was in yeshiva. He was doing very well. And then one day, the tragic news came in. Results came back from the tests that Baruch had life-threatening enemachla. Olam davened. He went through months and months of Yisurim. And he felt in himself, after suffering and going through all the treatments, we won't share the details now, he felt he was at the end of the line. He was lying there in his hospital bed. He'd had all the visits, all the chizuk, all the tefillahs. And he felt his days were literally numbered. He called his father over to his bed and he said, Daddy, I want to speak to you about my Levaya. Shah, father said, we're not talking about Levaya. There's no Levaya. You're going to live. You're going to be gesund. Mitzvah, I'm going to walk with you under the chuppah. And he said to his father, he said, listen, he said, believe me, I would love that to be the case. He said, I want to share with you. I'm scared I won't have a chance to share with you what I want by my levaya. So with a heavy heart, the father realized he owes it to his son to listen. So what did Baruch say? He said, I want to tell you that by my levaya, I want only one hesped. So the father said, who? He said, I want Rabbi Yitzchak Morgenstern to be masped. What? I'll tell you why the father was shocked, because Rabbi Yitzchak Morgenstern was a lovely guy, but he was Baruch's primary school rebbe. He said, Baruch, you shteit in yeshiva, you got Rosh Hashivas, Mashkichim, the Rav, loads of people who want to speak. Your primary school rebbe should speak, the only hesped by your levaya. So he signaled with his last energy to his father to the bedside table. He said, bring me that paper. His father goes into the bedside table. He finds a piece of paper, that A4 piece of paper. It's been folded. Do you know when you fold a paper, loads of time, the edges, mamish, become worn. His father opens the piece of paper. He starts reading. Simcha Klein says, I'm funny. Chaim Bamberger thought I was smart. His father said, what is this? He said, I want to tell you something, Baruch says to his father. He said, I wasn't always a mutzluchtige kid. If you remember, I had learning disabilities. I couldn't sit. I was jumpy. He said, one day I came to class. He said, I came to class, and the Rebbe was Rabbi Yitzchak Morgenstern that morning in primary school. And he said, boys, today we're going to do something different. Today, I want everyone in the class to write something nice about every other boy there. And he said, guys, take this seriously. He asked them to write something. It doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be long, but it should be sincere. It should be real. And every boy sat down and wrote something nice about each boy in the class. The Rebbe took the lists, and he compiled for each boy a paper with comments and feelings that his chaverim had felt about him. He said, when I got that list, my eyes lit up. He said, I never believed in myself. I thought I was one of the lower guys in class. He said, I couldn't believe it. This guy thought I'm actually clever. This guy remembered the kasha that I answered. He said, I couldn't believe it. He says, from then on, my life lit up. And he said, from then on, from primary school to the age of 17, my life was a life worth living. And he said, I feel I owe all my hatzlacha to this Rebbe, and that's why I want him, and only him, to speak by my levaya. 2 days later, Baruch was nifta, and by the levaya, only Rabbi Yitzchak Morgenstern was masked. You can imagine the tumult. Came to the shiva, all the chavir and his classmates were around, and everyone was asking, what is the deal? The Rosh Hashivas, why only him? And Rabbi Yitzchak said over the story, there was a few of his classmates there, there was a big gathering for the shiva. And he said over the story, he said over what it meant to Baruch. And around the room, a few of his classmates pulled out their wallets, 17-year-old boys, and they took out pieces of paper with worn edges. Sinas chinam destroyed, but avas chinam will rebuild. A wise man once said, there are 4 billion people in the world who go to sleep every night starving for a decent meal. But I wonder if maybe 20 billion people are out there going to sleep every night starving for a few words of sincere praise and appreciation. May we be zeichah to have ava, achva, shalom v'reyos. May we all be zeichah to see the bricks going up in the binyan beis hashlishi b'mehir yameinu. Amen.